ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ
वी आर् स्टडीङ्ग् दि Katha Upanishad. In our last class, in answer to Nachiketa's question, Yama Dharmaraja started in three mantras the description of the Omkara, also called Pranava. Why did he not answer Nachiketa's question directly? What was Nachiketa's question? Please let me know. What is beyond dharma and adharma, beyond the virtuous and the non-virtuous actions, whatever is beyond the cause and effect, which can never be a cause, therefore which can never be also an effect. The question naturally comes, all the scriptures, Puranas, Tantras, they with one voice say, God has created this world. This world is in effect and God is the cause. The Vedantic means Advaitic Vedantic answer is, this is for the beginner who at the very beginning is totally not intelligent, not capable of knowing the highest truth. Just as a child has to be led through alphabet, middle school, etc. So the first is, yes, yes, this world has come from God and God is divine. Therefore, whatever is the cause must exactly be the same as the effect. This is a law. The effect would be exactly like the cause. Reminding us, since we are coming from the divine, we must be divine. Nachiketa's question also said, creation can take place only in time and space. Therefore, his question was, that which is beyond the past, present and future. Whatever, if at all anything is there, you tell me about it. You describe me to me about it. That was the question. In answer, instead of describing what the Atman is. Now, the most wonderful thing is, already Nachiketa, who was supposed to be completely ignorant about the Atman, he had described it in the most precise words. That which is beyond dharma and adharma means between action and its fruit. All our life, we are bound by only one thing. The infinite is made to look as finite because we look to the infinite through the prism of time, space and causation. Dharma and adharma, merit and demerit are the mode of doing activities. That is the causation. The good action brings good result and the evil action brings evil result. But the Atman is neither the action nor the reaction or the karma phala. So also, every action must take place in time and space. So he is telling that which is beyond cause and effect. A cause, if at all it is a cause, can become an effect only through the prism of time and space. Through this, Nachiketa is denying very accurately that the Atman is beyond causation. It has nothing to do with neither the cause nor the effect. And that is what exactly the scriptures, especially the Upanishads, especially from the Advaitic viewpoint, first accept creation. God is the cause, but the Jagat, this world, is the effect. Later on, they deny it and say that if there is a cause, it must undergo a change. The name, another name for change is time. That means the Atman is also within the purview of time, space. And that cannot be Atman because whatever is under the thraldom of time, space, causation is limited and is many and is inert and is totally dependent. Whereas the description of the Atman is anything but just the opposite. Now we come to the third one. What is it? That which is beyond time. That which is beyond the past, beyond the present, and beyond the future. That means that which is timeless. That alone can be the Atma. We use several words for that. Anadi, Nitya, Ananta, etc., etc. So that can only be the real nature. Whatever we know, and this whole world is falls under these three categories. We are born because of our past actions, which consist of dharma and adharma. And we also fall under the concept of cause and effect. And cause and effect can take place only because of past, present and future in time. By denying the Atman as beyond dharma and adharma, cause and effect, krita, akrita. Akrita means cause, krita means that which is the effect. And he is also denying past, present and future. The whole gamut of time, space and causation has been totally denied. And that is the Atman. If that was the understanding of Nachiketa, we can understand what else Yamadharmaraja really can add to this description of the Atman. Absolutely nothing. It is impossible. So that was what we discussed in our last class. Now Yamadharmaraja was talking about something wonderful. A student has to be led step by step to become fit, even to understand the concepts that are being presented by the teacher, a real knower of Brahman. So he says there is something called a syllable, and the best of the syllable is called Omkara. This Omkara exactly represents what Nachiketa had already described, but in more elaborate detail. For example, in the Mandukya Upanishad, and a most marvelous commentary in the form of Karikas have been written by Gaudapadacharya, the grand guru of Shankaracharya. Remember, Shankaracharya's guru was Govindapada, Bhagavatpada. And his teacher was Gauda Bhagavatpada. Long before Shankaracharya, maybe 60 or 100 years earlier, this Gauda Bhagavatpada has written in the form of Karikas. The whole Mandukya Upanishad, the essence of the Mandukya Upanishad is contained in two important teachings. What is it? That God is beyond this world. This world consists of three states, Jagrat, Swapna and Sushupti, the waking, the dreaming and the dreamless or deep sleep. No matter however small a creature is, every creature is nothing but a victim of these three, moving from the one to the second, second to the third, third to the first, and continuously from birth to death and from one birth to another birth, innumerable life. All these Srishti or Jagat, experience of I and everything else, called by Sri Shankaracharya in beautiful terminology, Asmat Pratyaya, Yushmat Pratyaya. The idea of me and the idea of everything else. I am the subject, everything else is the object. That was the entire universe consists. That is the first teaching. And the Atman is completely different from it. And that is what we have to understand through this Mandukya Karika, that Omkara represents these two states. the experienced state, division, subject and object, and that which is beyond the subject and object. How come? Is not the subject Atman? The very usage of the word subject is subject to the object. If there were to be no object, there would be no subject. If there was no subject, there would be no object. If there were to be no witness, there will be nothing to be witnessed. It doesn't even exist. Then, what about the Atman? That is where the Omkara has got three syllables, which are called heard, which are what is called struck, ahata, and Omkara ends in anahata, that which is unstruck sound. For example, a, o, m, combined produces this symbol om, but we don't utter om, we say om. That that prolongation, that vibration is called, it is a silent sound, anahata dhvani, only the yogis can hear it. It is only for demonstration purpose. I have vocalized it, but truly speaking, it cannot be vocalized. That's why it is called anahata dhvani. Interestingly, I had the good fortune to meet a great soul called Swami Shantananda. Of course, this is what I heard from others, because you cannot really understand other person's experience. He was supposed to be constantly hearing this anahata dhvani. Once a Swami directly asked him, "Maharaj, we heard like that. Is it true that you are hearing this anahata?" And he said, "Yes." Then he also, on perhaps some other occasion, he described it. I myself had doubt whether I am imagining it or really speaking, there is this anahata dhvani. He went to his guru, who was none other than Holy Mother Sharada Devi, and asked. And the mother said, "No, my son, what you are hearing is absolutely true experience. That is the pranava, that is the omkara, another name for Atma." This was what Yama Dharmaraja is trying to tell us from in the 16th mantra of the Kathopanishad. Etadheva aksharam brahma, etadheva aksharam param, etadheva aksharam gnatva, yo yadichyati tasya tat. This syllable, omkara, pranava, is Brahman. This syllable is also the highest syllable anybody can think of. Having known this syllable, whatever one desires, that one gets, one becomes that actually. So there are only two things one can get, one can desire. This is beautifully expressed. Do I want to become sugar, or do I want to go on eating sugar? Eating sugar means going to Brahmaloka and experiencing the highest humanly possible enjoyment, happiness, joy, pleasure that is possible for the five sense organs. That is called Brahmaloka. If someone has a desire, we experience it, and the desire for Brahman, the liberation, is less than the desire to experience worldly pleasure, then he will go to Brahmaloka, and the only pathway is through the contemplation of this Omkara. So it is said, this is the best syllable. And why is it called the best syllable? In my past classes, I did explain, taking the help of Swami Vivekananda's explanation. But to briefly recollect, every living being has a sound box. Through the sound box, the first sound that becomes understandable sound, meaningful sound, is called A. And when this proceeds through the sound box to the middle, that becomes, by the process of natural evolution, U. And in Sanskrit, Sandhi, joining of two syllables. is called sandhi. A plus U becomes O. And this sound takes a peculiar shape when two lips meet, two lips close. That is called um. So this A, U, um becomes Om. And through this, every name in this world can be uttered, conveyed to others. That means every object in this known universe has a peculiar form, therefore a distinct name to separate it from others, and it has a distinct sound. And all this form, name, and this distinct sound form an idea in our mind called vritti, chitta vritti, and every vritti that was, that is, and that is going to be coming in the future can be uttered, can be expressed through this Om. This is for the worshippers of those with desires. But there are people who worship the same Om, not as A, U, M. If at all they think of this A, U, and M, it is to deny the infinity of these three syllables. But then what remains? What remains is the true infinity, true unborn, true nitya, true shashvata, true ananta, true unborn, true deathless, etc. What is expressed symbolically through the famous three desires in the form of prayers, three prayers. What are those three prayers? Asatoma sadgamaya, tamasoma jyotirgamaya, mrityoma amrutangamaya. Also simply expressed as satchit ananda. If somebody wants to attain to this state, that means attaining means knowing that I am that. There is no travel involved. It is, if at all we have to say it is a travel from non-cognition to right cognition. What is wrong cognition? I am not the Atman, I am anything else. What is right cognition? I am not anything, I am the Atma. And if somebody wants to attain to that second stage, I am the Atma, then this Omkara. First you deny it and then go beyond it. The whole Mandukya, which I mentioned earlier, describes graphically these three states of waking dream and dreamless or deep sleep, only to deny them, not to affirm them. In Vivek Chodamani also, the disciple was expressing this beautiful truth. Where has this whole world disappeared? Where did it disappear? Where did the finite thing disappear? Into the infinite. Where did the snake disappear? Into the rope. Where did the dreamer disappear? Into the waker. So this is the beautiful idea Yama Dharmaraja is slowly leading, purifying the heart of the student, taking him step by step. So he says, etadheva akshara. And mind you, this is called akshara. Akshara means that which decays, that which becomes smaller and smaller and disappears. That is called akshara. But this omkara is akshara. That is why every alphabet is called akshara. And Sanskrit language has 52 aksharas. Because these sound syllables, aksharas, are also as eternal as the knowledge they represent. So coming back, etadheva aksharam brahma, etadheva aksharam param. We cannot get another syllable like omkara much better. Let me just give an illustration. If somebody says that the highest state is Narayana, the highest truth is Narayana. Sometimes Vedanta uses this word Narayana Padam, tad Vishnoho Paramam Padam, that Vishnu's highest state. Vishnu is the highest state, not Vishnu's. Vishnu is the highest state. The moment a Vaishnava, devotee of Vishnu, recollects Vishnu, he only gets to the state of form, name, four hands, etc. And he seems unable to go beyond. Whereas, a true Vedantin says, Narayana, Shiva, Buddha, Christ, all are included in that Omkara, and Omkara is the complete Purnamadaha, Purnamidam. So this is the highest syllable. What practical terms Yamadharmaraja is also explaining is, if someone doesn't believe in God or any particular form of God, but believes in a higher principle, he can also just utter Om and he will also reach the highest state, provided he fulfills certain necessary conditions, which is called Sadhana, Chatushtaya, Sampatti, the fourfold treasure of spiritual characters, qualities. Now, Yamadharmaraja is continuing about Omkara, of which Ramakrishna says that the Sandhya merges in Gayatri, and Gayatri is a particularized aspect of the infinity, but one should go beyond that, and the essence is Om. And with that, he doesn't say Omkara merges in something else. If at all he has to say, and he did express it, this Omkara becomes silent. The audible Omkara, Sri Ramakrishna says, becomes the silent Omkara. Silence here doesn't mean thinking, uttering mentally. Verbally is one, mentally is one. No, what he means is, one becomes completely identified with the real meaning of Om, which is another name for Brahma. So, Brahman, Omkara, Atman, Ishvara, all these symbolize exactly the same being. There is not the slightest difference. So, he continues, Etadheva Aksharam Gnatva, knowing this Akshara. Here, knowing doesn't mean reading from books or listening from teachers like me. No, here Gnatva means truly realizing, becoming one with it through what is called Upasana. What result one gets, whatever one desires, that he will get. And as I mentioned earlier, there are only two things a person can desire. I want to go to Brahmaloka, which is called Kramamukti, or I want to become liberated right now and here, which is called Brahma Prapti. Brahma Loka Prapti, Brahma Prapti. Brahma Loka Prapti is called Kramamukti. Brahma Prapti is called liberation. There are a third type of people, which I did not until now deliberately mention. They have neither desire for liberation, they have only the desire for even more extensive enjoyment. And if they merit, they will also go to Brahmaloka, but as soon as their merit just becomes destroyed by staying there, he will have to come down. That was the idea Bhagavad Gita is beautifully expressing. Shrine punye matya lokam vishanti. At the end of exhaustion of this punya, a person again has to come, what I call, top it up again if he wants to go. But after a few times experience, the person gets tired and he says, I don't want to come, go up and come down. Permanently I want to be there. And that definitely that desire will come, because staying in Brahmaloka is the most purifying sadhana. Anybody can do it. That makes him what is called Jignasu. And then next time, either he becomes a dweller of Brahmaloka and lives with Brahman, attends Katopanishad classes in Brahmaloka, taken by Brahmaji himself, and then at the end of it, along with Brahma, he will attain to Brahman and never returns back, which is called Sadhya Mukti. Next mantra we are going. Again, he is, the Yamadharmaraja has not enough words to describe this path. He is describing the sadhana as the greatest sadhana. What is it? Etat alambanam sreshtam, etat alambanam param, etat alambanam gnatva, brahma loke mahiyate. This support is the best. This support is the supreme. Knowing this support, one is worshipped in the world of Brahman. Etat, this sreshtam, this is the Omkara Upasana, is the greatest pathway, greatest staircase any human being can take. Why? Something very special here. Worship of chosen deities like Rama, Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, etc., etc. These are all, compared to this Omkara, they are less great. Why are they less great? Because there is a greater chance of these followers becoming fanatical. And in fact, that is what is happening. Every follower claiming that his own chosen deity, the highest Brahman. And if these people had an iota of intelligence to understand that what they call Rama, Krishna, Jesus, Buddha are none other than the highest Brahman, but with some name and form, because the devotee likes to think of Brahman in that form, there would be really no problem, no fanaticism. But after some time, the person becomes convinced. I heard people who are Vaishnavas condemning Shiva, and they are supposed to be great teachers, very well-known speakers in this world. It is these people's buddhi is grey matter, is completely mixed up with mud. I am very generous. I am still using the word mixed up. It is not even mixed up, perhaps there is no grey matter at all. That's what Sri Ramakrishna is telling, praising a great pandit called, I think, Padmalochan. He was the court pandit of Bardhwan. Once there was a controversy. Who is superior, Vishnu or Shiva? And he gave a typical true devotee's answer. Sir, not to speak of me, my 14 generations have seen neither Shiva nor Vishnu. Without seeing both, how can we judge? Even if somebody had vision of Vishnu, not Shiva, his judgment will be only partial. Somebody else has the vision of Shiva and not seen Vishnu, his judgment also will be flawed judgment. Only when we know two things, rationality comes, which is better, which is inferior. So here, without seeing, how can I say that? He has echoed the true spirit of the scriptures, that everyone is calling upon the same truth, ekam sat vipraha bhaudha vadanti. This is what Yamadharmaraja, through the instructions to Nachiketa, driving that truth to entire humanity, not to speak of merely Hindus, that this Omkara, that danger is less. Why? Because in Omkara, we are only in the state of denial. I am not the waking state, I am not the waker, I am not the dreamer, I am not the sleeper. By denying the whole gamut of dualistic experience, indirectly, this is a way of eulogizing, praising the non-dualistic state. We employ it all the time in our day-to-day world. For example, suppose a devotee comes with two children and the Swami meets them, of course gives them chocolate like me, but he passes a silly remark which he should not pass. The younger one seems to be very intelligent. He didn't speak anything about the elder one. But what is the implication? If the younger one is called intelligent, the elder one naturally is not intelligent, or at least not that intelligent. So this kind of logic is employed by praising, by denying what is called these three states of experience. Kathopanishad is indirectly praising that which has nothing to do with these three states, and that which without which these three states are not possible at all. I'll give you a small example also. Imagine there are three rooms, and all the three rooms have to be built upon the same earth. Room A, B, C are 1, 2, 3. The rooms are different from each other, but the ground upon which these three are based is exactly the same. What you call A, B or C rooms, 1, 2, 3, is nothing but you put a few barriers, walls, and then you say this is, you draw some boundaries on this earth, this is A, B and C. This is what we are doing, foolish people. We are drawing on this earth some boundaries. This is India and this is the Russia, this is the Pakistan, this is Ceylon, etc., etc. Where was this Pakistan earlier? Where was this Bangladesh earlier? Both are there only on this earth as India. But where was India before? There was no India at all. Some conglomeration of different kingdoms were there. Where was Europe? In fact, if you study the history of geography, you will see that the whole earth that we know is one single whole, and the tectonic plates started drifting separately, and it is divided as South America, North America, Europe, Africa, and etc. other countries. So this Omkara is that which destroys effectively fanaticism, because by denying these three experiences, I am not a Christian, I am not a Hindu, I am not a Buddhist, but I am what I am. And a Buddhist, a Christian, and a Hindu, when they deny Hinduism, Buddhism, and Christianity, etc., what remains? Only one undefinable mass of I consciousness. And there cannot be anything to distinguish. This is my consciousness and this is your consciousness. That's what Yamadharma Raja is praising. And he didn't have enough praise to show us, to shower upon us the greatness, glory of this Omkara. He's telling this is the most certain, definite way to realize who you really are, what the Atman is, what the Paramatman is. Etat alambanam sreshtam. Etat alambanam param. That means, this is the highest. Which probably means that everybody ultimately has to go beyond the names and forms. Let us think about it. If we go beyond names and forms, can we define what is that highest reality? What is beyond names and forms? Can we draw any boundaries there? It is impossible. That boundaryless, indefinable, whole truth is called Purnam, and that Purnam is represented by this syllable, Om. Etad alambanam jnatva brahmaloke mahiyate. By knowing, here knowing, I mentioned earlier, is not like knowing. Some knowledge comes through books, some knowledge comes by hearing, some knowledge comes by thinking, but all these are limitations. Anything, any knowledge that one obtains through the five sense organs as well as through the mind is absolutely limited. Anything that is experienced through a finite, limited instrument necessarily has to remain limited only. But when a person goes beyond A, U and Ma, and that is the true experience, if at all it can be called an experience, and that is the true Brahman, that is the highest reality. So he says, Gnatva, having realized what? That I and Brahman are not at all separate. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman, I am the Atman, I am Ishvaraha. Earlier we have seen Narayanoham, Narakantakoham. Like that, in the Vivek Chodamani, we had described that state, indescribable state. So, etada olambanam jnatva, brahmaloke mahiyate. Again, we have to take two meanings here. If a person's imagination limits him to the enjoyment of brahmaloka, then he becomes the enjoyer. Mahiyate means, there he becomes most glorified. And what does it mean? It means, he is not going like a citizen into like earthly countries. There, Matva means, I am Brahmadeva, Rupasana. That is what he attains. He experiences that greatest joy or bliss exactly as Brahmadeva experiences it. That is the only way by identifying oneself. This is called Upasana. But there are a few rare people, Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschit. Such people do not want anything else excepting complete identification, not Brahmadeva, but Brahman. Such people he becomes. And then he becomes glorified. Why? If you are glorifying Brahman, then anybody who knows Brahman becomes what? Brahman. Therefore, it is glorifying only Brahman. Ramakrishna has beautiful telling examples to convey these deepest of truths. Supposing a rich man has a son, and one day this rich man throws a party, a feast party for whatever occasion, and he wants to invite all the people that he knows, and he himself doesn't go. Either he sends his servants to invite people to come and participate in the feast, or he sends his son, and everybody respects the son because they know this is the son of that wealthy person. By respecting the son, in fact, they are respecting the person himself. When a person becomes one with Brahma, there is absolutely no differentiation between the knower of Brahma and Brahman. Brahma with Brahma Bhavati. All the glories that belong to the Brahman also belong to that person, because he is not there, she is not there. What remains is Brahman only. Here I want to add something. What is Yamadharmaraja speaking about? He is talking about Upasana. How does one practice Upasana? This is the best Sanskrit word. I have not found any equivalent word in any language. That's why in every Indian language, we use only that word Upasana. I will use that word. But roughly, if someone wants to have English word, the nearest word is either meditation or contemplation, perhaps is a better word. So, one has to contemplate this Omkara. Why? Omkara is the best syllable. It is the greatest representative of Brahman. Therefore, both Brahmadeva as well as Brahma. But here we are talking about Upasana. What is the meaning of Upasana? Upa means near. Asana means approaching somebody who is sitting on that asana. It is, we are not talking about a seat is spread, but nobody is there and we are approaching. If you think if you are approaching a seat, an empty seat, then what will you become? Empty. But you have to imagine that that seat is occupied by somebody, as we do in Ramnam. If you are observant enough, you will see there is a Rama's photo, Sita, Lakshmana, Bharata, Shatrughna, Hanuman. But by the side, if you look down, there is a seat spread. In front of that seat, some uncut fruits are placed. What is the idea? Hanuman, wherever there is Rama, yatra yatra Raghunatha Kirtanam, tatra tatra Kritamastakanjali. So there will be Hanuman. But we don't have that kind of eyes to visualize him. Only great souls like Swami Brahmananda can visualize him. Perhaps our devotees could recollect Swami Brahmananda ji, wherever he happened to be, a mart of joy, bliss flows 24 hours a day like the cooling breeze of spring season. It is a time of great festivity. Some great devotee remarked that whenever I enter into Belur Math gate, I have not even approached anywhere nearer the shrine. But just once from outside I enter into the gate, I can know whether Swami Brahmananda is present at Belur Math or not. That means he is feeling the very presence of Swami Brahmananda. Just remember, Brahmananda, not a person, but that experience of Brahman's joy. Brahmananda was at Varanasi. One day, he decided to hold a Ramnama in a Hanuman's temple, Sankata Mochana Hanuman's Mandir. All the sadhus, brahmacharis, devotees, a huge gathering, with, of course, wherever Maharaj goes, follows a great quantity of highly delectable food materials to be offered. They were all taken there and they were offered to the deity, and then they started singing Ramna. By the way, the present Ramna that we sing was unknown to many people in the north. When Swami Brahmananda ji was staying at Chennai, Madras, the present Chennai, Madras, he happened to hear it at a public temple, and he was so taken up with that, he collected the material and added Tulasidas Sanskrit hymns. As you know, Tulasidas has translated Ramayana, which is known as Ramcharitamanas, and it is divided into 7 khandas, 7 chapters. At the beginning of every chapter, this Tulasidas, who was a great Sanskrit poet, beautiful Sanskrit poet like Shankaracharya, he had hymned Sita, Lakshmana, Bharata, Shatrughna, Hanuman and all those people. And that is what we sing, Apadam, Apahartaram, Varnanam, Arthasanganam, etc. And the Ramnama is sandwiched between this Varnanam and Apadam, Apahartanam and Kanakambara, etc. So, he composed at the beginning, before writing in the local dialect, in pure Sanskrit, some verses. Brahmananda Maharaj, who knew this Ramcharitamanas, collected all those and sandwiched this real Ramnama in between them. That is the present form of the Ramnama, which most of our centers do, especially on every Ekadashi time. This Ramnama was sung as before the Ramnama started, singing started, an old Brahmana entered, sat in a side corner, and then as soon as Ramnama was over, without receiving any prasada, he got up and started, he walked away. And many people noticed it. Later on, Swami Brahmananda asked those who gathered there, "Have you noticed that old Brahmana?" They said, "Yes, we saw an old man coming and sitting there." He asked, "Do you know who that old man is?" And they said, "Of course, no." And he replied, "That is Hanuman. He has come to enjoy the bliss of Ramanama Sankirtana. Yatra yatra Raghunatha Kirtanam, tatra tatra Kritamasta Kanjalim, Bashpavari Paripurna Lochanam, Marutim Namata Rakshasantakam." This is part of that Ramanama that we sing all the time. Now, what I wanted to introduce is, in the ancient times, as well as even the present times, we employ a system. Previously, they used to call it Upasana, Surya Upasana, Chandra Upasana, Varuna Upasana, etc., Vedic times. Later on, it has metamorphosed into the present modern type of puja. But the essence is absolutely the same. So this I will talk about a little bit in this today's class about Upasana, and I will talk some more perhaps in the next class. What is upasana? You approach a being nearer and nearer mentally. First of all, it is a mental act. Mentally approaching nearer and nearer towards our chosen deity. It is called upasana. Asana means a person who is sitting, a state of consciousness, and we are approaching that state of consciousness, and that must be a higher state of consciousness, because always the evolution is from the lower to the higher. This is the broad meaning of that word upasana. Then we get this most beautiful idea. Upasana in the olden times is divided into several types. Today's class I will just give you a broad outline of it. Upasana can be done through either pratima or pratika. In the Vedic times, they used to do upasana pratikas. Pratika means, prati means towards, ka means to move. Move towards something which we had chosen as a definite object of approach, goal. In the olden days, the Brahman, of course, had to be worshipped. People have very little idea about what is Brahman. As we discussed it in the yesterday's Bhagavad Gita, the manifestation of Brahman, we can see the greatest mountains, the more vast rivers, the most holiest of the rivers, the best trees, the best flowers, the best birds, the best of human beings. What did we discuss yesterday? That it is the punyo gandha prithivyancha. There is beautiful smell representative of the earth. So also the fire. So also the air. So also the water. Paso mapsu kaunteya. Then prabhasmi shashi surya yoho. I am that splendor, that tejas that is manifesting in the sun. And of course, you know, as the manifestation of Brahman, sunlight is the only light, really speaking. The light of the moon is nothing but sunlight. Then what about the light of the fire? Fire has got two characteristics, heat as well as light. The sun has got how many characteristics? These two characteristics. What are they? The light as well as the heat. That is why in winter season, what do? Go and expose yourself to the sunlight. That is what most people in Europe also do. And that is what they call tanning their skin, etc. And sometimes they overdo it and get what is called skin cancer. What is it? Surya Bhagavan is telling, I am not satisfied burning your skin. I want to burn inside also, inside and outside both. In the earlier days, the pratimas, the images that we know nowadays, Narayana, Shiva, etc., were not existing at all. Only these natural symbols, the sun, the moon, the thunder, the lightning, the dawn, the dust, the fire, all these formed the greatest symbols. Outside, external. But internal, the mind, the prana, pranopasana. Then the mana upasana. I am the mind. Not our stupid mind, but the universal cosmic mind known as Hiranyagarbha or also known as Ishvara. Even physically, physiologically, externally, the cosmic form is called Virat. That is how Bhrigu was asked to go and perform tapasya. So he went and performed great tapasya. What did he realize? Annam brahmete yajana. What is annam here? The Virat Purusha. The cosmic, external, all the five gross, five elements combined together before dividing itself into the adhyatmika adibhautika and adidaivika. A combination of these three is known as Virat. Individual. Each individual has got adhyatmika, adibhautika and adidaivika. Similarly, the cosmic aspect also has adhyatmika, adibhautika and adidaivika. When the individual sheds his limitations and ascends to that idea, I am not the individual, but I am the cosmos, I am the universal. When he attains that, and Bhrigu attained through tapasya. Earlier I mentioned, tapasya is not unnecessary hardship, but it is the capacity to think deeply. When a person is controlling his outgoing senses, so that they will not think of any external objects of desire, but become free from the thraldom, bondage of these objects, he gets tremendous time, tremendous space, tremendous freedom, and he uses that freedom to think of the subtle truths. That is called tapasya. Bhrigu was asked by his father, go and perform tapasya, and he did it. What did he realize? Annam brahmeti vyajana. Now I know I am the annam. What is annam here? Not your rice and sambar and rasam. Here annam means the cosmic external world. What the scientists call the billions and billions of galaxies, compared to which our earth is just a small speck. This is not what we are talking about. We are talking about the highest universal identity, and it has a technical name that is called Virat. The individual aspect is called Vishwa and the universal aspect is called Virat. And after deep thinking, he realized, I am not merely a small body. I am not only this BM complex, body-mind complex. I am Virat, this whole known cosmos. That was a tremendous progress in spiritual life, but he understood this is only the outer one small bit of attainment. There are many layers to be uncovered. So finally he does it. That is what upasana has to do. It expands our personality from this small, infinitesimal, finite, limited being to the vast, infinitude and totally free. To the correspondingly, a person identifies and he correspondingly, his freedom automatically grows. This is the broad outline, the essence of what is upasana. Shed our present personality and identify yourselves with the true individuality. And that individuality is Brahman. Swami Vivekananda used to make this word. You are not really an individual. You are dividual. You are divided. You have to become truly independent. And all spiritual practices are meant only for one purpose. This duality must become non-dual. The dividual must become the indivisible individual. That is the one and only purpose of upasana. And it is so marvelously discussed in our Upanishads as well as in our Tantras and Puranas. And I will give you a brief outline of it in our next Upanishad class, and then we will proceed. The essence of what we discussed is Omkara is the essence of all sadhanas. It is the greatest path. It is the most supreme path. It is a path which will not breed any fanaticism. It is suitable for everybody, from a child to the wisest person, grown-up person, irrespective of religion, race, language, cultural boundaries, etc. And it is absolute truth. We will discuss these beautiful ideas
in our future classes. Om Sahana Vavato Sahanau Bhunato Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.